MacCast, Wednesday, August 28th, 2019. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Does it feel like the calm before the storm to you? Looking over this week's show notes, it definitely feels that way to me. I know I say this a lot, but we don't have that many items to talk about this episode, although we have some good things to discuss happening in the world of Apple and the Macintosh and all of our iOS devices. As you know, more and more lately, it's more about the iOS devices, and more specifically, more about the iPhone, which we should be getting, if rumors turn out to be true, we should be getting an announcement soon of when Apple's event will happen for the new iPhone 11. We're expecting that to happen sometime probably in the first couple weeks of September, assuming Apple stays on schedule, and there's no reason to think that they won't. And that would be followed up again by an event, probably a MacBook Pro kind of event in October. And so right now, there's just not a lot happening, right? There's not a lot of news. And then we are going to get inundated with new stuff and have all kinds of fun things to talk about. But in the meantime, we do have a few things to discuss. We will be running through some of those iPhone 11 and other announcement expectations, kind of running those down. I know we've covered them on the last few episodes of the MacCast over the last couple months, but we'll kind of try to wrap those up and round them up as we move into the fall Apple release season. We're going to talk about Siri and its grading program a little bit. There's some new developments there. We've got some iOS updates, and then also Apple supposedly getting rid of a feature before it was ever even really birthed, but kind of a cool one and something interesting maybe to talk about a little bit. And that's pretty much it for the news this week. And then we're going to do some follow-up on time zones in calendars. We had a question about that in the last episode of the MacCast, and I got some great feedback from you and a tip and that might help out if you're trying to put events in your calendar and have them be independent of time zones. So we'll talk about that a little bit more. Going to help a listener with a Mac that's struggling with some Wi-Fi problems, and then also help out another listener who is experiencing issues with volume and headphones on his iPad. And that will round out this briefer episode of the MacCast, but it'll still be fun. Of course, before we dive in, I do want to take a quick moment and thank my show sponsor, and that is Linode. Hey, do you need a server for just about anything? I think Linode is a great choice because they make it fast and easy to deploy and manage a server to run just about anything. You want to do a gaming server? Maybe you want to run Minecraft or Ark or Terraria? Yep, it can do that. You want to have a blog, WordPress, Drupal? That's no problem. If you want to set up a server for keeping track of your code projects, GitLab. You can set up a GitLab server on Linode, or even make your own VPN with OpenVPN. And they make it super simple to instantly deploy and manage an SSD server in their Linode cloud. You can get up and running literally in seconds. And what I love about Linode is all the choices they give you. I already mentioned all the different kinds of servers you can do, but they also give you your choice of Linux distributions, all ready to go. You can also have your choice of different resources and the location that you want to run your Linode server in. They have 10 different locations worldwide, and best of all, they're giving all new MacCast customers a $20 credit. I've set up a Minecraft server so friends and family can play Minecraft together. It's awesome, and it was super simple to set up on Linode. Their management interface makes it really easy, and I had my choice, again, of Linux distributions, of server configurations, and Basically, if it runs on Linux, you can run it on your Linode. Most of the distributions are available right out of the box, but you can even upload a custom image if you want. And these are great servers. They feature native SSD storage, a 40 gigabit network, and industry-leading processors. And you have your choice of those 10 worldwide data centers, including the one they just opened in Toronto, Canada, built with their most up-to-date hardware and their next-generation network backbone. Pricing is also really simple and easy. There's no surprise fees, and you pay for what you use with hourly billing across all their plans and all their add-on services. You can get the server you need for as little as $5 a month on a Nanode plan, or go all the way up to a high-powered dedicated CPU plan. It's really your choice, and their dashboard makes it easy to manage your Linode and upgrade your plan and services when and if you need to. Need backup? They've got that. Large storage volumes? No problem. Load balancing? Yep, they have you covered. And if you need support, they're there for you as well. 24/7 live customer support, and they have a great documentation library, something that I took advantage of when I was setting up my Minecraft server. It was great when I got stuck, and you should really check it out. So visit linode.com/maccast to set up your first Linode and get a $20 credit when you use the promo code MacCast2019. That's linode.com/MacCast. Use the code MacCast2019, and a big thank you to Linode for their support of the MacCast. As I mentioned at the top of the show, we are probably just a week or two away, well, a couple weeks away, really, from the iPhone 11 announcements from Apple. We don't have an official date yet. Obviously, we're just speculating at this point, but if Apple sticks to schedules, and they have been for the last, 7 years, we can almost set the date, right? We think it's going to be the 10th of September, but we'll see. Regardless, by this point, we have a pretty good idea of what most of the features of the iPhone 11 might be, although Apple always tends to have a surprise or two up their sleeve. One thing we are expecting is that the OLED screen models, the updates to the iPhone XS and XS Max, are possibly going to get some rebranding. We had heard that they would be called the iPhone Pro, and I think that makes a lot of sense. Apple kind of moving to that Pro moniker and just bringing that to the iPhone, which would line up with the iMac and the iMac Pro and the MacBook and the MacBook Pro. So why not do the same thing for iPhone? You simply have iPhone and iPhone Pro. Now, we're not hearing for certain that they'll rebrand the iPhone XR, the iPhone, but I would think that would be the logical conclusion of this, right? The models on the higher end, the OLED models, are expected to feature that new tri-lens camera system with a wide angle, a telephoto, and an ultra-wide lens. The iPhone R update, or XR update rather, is expected to get a dual lens camera system. So upgrades across the board, and we're also hearing that there could be some extra processing power in the inside the phones as well. They will supposedly be able to take three images simultaneously on those tri-lens camera systems, with each of the lenses taking an image and that being combined together with the aid of image processing to create a higher resolution picture. This is according to Bloomberg. That new image processing element is expected to be part of the A13, and they're saying it's called either the AMX or the Matrix internally at Apple. I'm sure Apple's marketing team is going to come up with some slick marketing term for that, and it'll be interesting to find out what exactly that is, but right now we're just kind of hearing the internal naming. Sometimes, occasionally, they do pick up the internal naming, so I think Matrix sounds a little bit cooler than AMX, the Apple Matrix processor. It's expected to be a math coprocessor that is explicitly tuned for augmented reality applications and computer vision tasks, so helping with things like combining those images and making sure that everything goes together smoothly to create a great image. We had also been hearing a little bit about the potential finish of the upgraded iPhone 11 models. A matte finish, kind of a more textured finish to the back glass, which I think would be really nice and be a nice little update to the styling. We've had, you know, shiny and maybe slippery for a while, and it'd be neat if they'd change that up a little bit. But more recently, we'd been hearing that the matte finish color options might be limited to just some models. So maybe you'll have your choice, either glossy or matte, which is interesting considering that was what we had back in the day for the screens on our MacBook Pros, but that went away, and so it's going to come back maybe in the back glass. Probably not as useful if you're looking for anti-glare stuff, but still, it'll be a nice change. And we're also hearing that the new glass is going to include a new shatter-resistant technology. What exactly that is, we don't have a lot of details, but again, I'm sure there'll be some great marketing terminology for it, and Apple will probably go into great depths to explain how advanced the new glass is. At the end of the day, we all know that it's just the newest stuff from Corning, whatever they are putting out in terms of Gorilla Glass. Do they still call it Gorilla Glass? You don't hear that term thrown around much anymore, so... you know, just new Apple Glass on there. We had also been hearing for a while that there was going to be possibly a new color option, a green option. I thought it would be great if that was something that was released around Earth Day, kind of like Apple's product Red. But more recently, we're hearing that the green color option is probably reserved for the update to the iPhone XR. And to me, that makes a little bit more sense because I think Apple is going to stick with the standard pro finishes of silver, space gray, and gold. Another thing that relates to the screen that some people might be disappointed about is it's looking like 3D Touch may be out with the new display. They're supposedly going to use some sort of new display technology from Samsung, similar, we're hearing, to the displays in the current flagship Samsung models, and that means no 3D Touch. What we will get instead is the haptic touch technology, which is the stuff that's in the current iPhone XR model. So that's where you do a press and hold, and then you get some haptic feedback. And on the iPhone XR, I didn't know this till recently. I guess there's actually a setting you can go in, and you can adjust that delay so that it activates a little bit more quickly. Because one of the early complaints was that you kind of had to long press or press and hold a bit longer than you would typically want to actually have stuff fire off. So, you know, I don't know how I feel about that. I'm not a huge 3D touch user. To be honest, I forget it's there sometimes. But when I do use it, I tend to like the feature. So having that go away, I think ultimately where I land is that that's a good thing. And it goes back to some reasons that I talked about in the past on the MacCast, which is just consistency of the interface. Because your iPads don't have 3D touch, and we do have haptic touch over there on the, well, I guess at least the long touch. I don't think we have the haptic stuff yet, but maybe that's coming in the updates to the iPad Pro. But point is, to have that consistent experience where it works the same on my iPhone as it does on my iPad, I think that brings a lot of value to the user experience. I just think that consistency makes our devices easier to use, because I'm already in a state, I don't know about you, with the different kinds of gestures and the different ways of doing touch, that it gets confusing. I try to do certain gestures on one device and they don't work, and I have to kind of retrain my brain, and it does create a slightly frustrating user experience. So anytime they can add in more consistency, I think that's ultimately a good thing. I will kind of lament the loss of 3D touch though, because it was pretty cool technology, right? More on the iPhone 11, we're expecting it to have improved water resistance, and also, as we've been hearing about for a while, bilateral wireless charging, meaning that you can actually use your iPhone as a wireless charging device to charge other iPhones, or probably more commonly, things like your AirPods. So should be a nice update. Oh, and then finally, probably the biggest update that we heard about this week is that there may be some upgrades to the Face ID sensors and the TrueDepth camera system that allow it to capture a wider field of view, and more importantly, to do things like read Face ID or detect your face when the device is even flat on a table. something that I have often wanted it to do. It's kind of frustrating when you're working with your iPhone on a table, you need to unlock it, and you actually have to pick it up and kind of hold it in front of your face. Not a huge deal, but a slight inconvenience, and if they can improve that experience, again, I think this is another good thing. Ming-Chi Kuo had actually mentioned this before, that Apple was going to update the Face ID system with a more powerful flood illuminator, and that is supposedly to limit the interference from environmental infrared sources. So if you're out in bright sunlight, something like that, you know that Face ID can get a little bit flaky, so we're expecting maybe some improvements there as well. I would assume it will also get faster just because of processors and other such things. So, you know, Face ID moving into what, its third, fourth generation, and constantly improving. So all in all, I'm pretty excited about these updates to iPhone. Are they earth-shattering? No, I don't think we're getting earth-shattering updates for iPhones anymore, but I think this is a nice set of upgrades. And overall, early indications are that iPhone sales are probably going to be pretty good. There's a lot of people that are reaching that 2-3 year cycle for upgrades, and I think they're expecting these to sell very well, especially with the new camera system and the new camera technology. I think that's the number one thing that's probably going to drive iPhone sales, and probably the biggest feature that most people care about is how good are the photos on my iPhone, and anytime you can improve those, I think that's going to help you sell devices. And Apple does seem to be very much focused in that direction. So again, we'll have to wait till September, a couple weeks here, and then we'll have all of the actual real details, and we'll be able to talk about the iPhone 11 in a much more concrete manner. But how are you feeling? Are you excited about iPhone 11, or is this one that you're going to pass up? Shoot me some feedback, send me an email, maccast@gmail.com. We also are expecting an update to the iPads. That's probably going to happen later at a separate event. I would imagine that will come around at the October event, where they will potentially also announce the 16-inch MacBook Pro. As far as updates to iPads, they're expected to be a little bit more benign. Spec bump to the iPad Pro line, so new processors, all that sort of thing. They are expected to also get the new Tri-Lens camera system and the True Depth camera system upgrades, so the new improved Face ID stuff. And probably the biggest thing in iPads is the rumor that we've been talking about for a while, that Apple plans to update the entry-level 9.7-inch iPad to a 10.2-inch version in the same physical form factor, and probably bringing in things like True Depth camera system and all the other niceties. And I would assume they would add the dual lens camera system like on the update to the iPhone XR. Few other things that we are expecting from Apple in the near future. New Apple Watch finishes in the ceramic and titanium. One leaker is actually claiming that the new watch might be able to take blood pressure readings. That's a health feature that we'd been hearing Apple had been experimenting with and working on for a while. So if they can bring that into a new version of the Apple Watch, that could help sell units and drive Apple Watch forward. Although Apple Watch still very popular, as we've talked about on previous episodes of the MacCast, it is the top selling smartwatch in the world at the moment by a pretty wide margin. So anything more Apple can do to help drive Apple Watch sales, that's ultimately going to be a good thing. We're also hearing that there are some new AirPods in the works, but I don't believe those are expected anytime soon. As far as new features for AirPods, improved water resistance and noise cancellation. Noise cancellation, I think, would be a great feature to add. I am hoping that if they do it, it is a smart noise cancellation system, something that can be controlled maybe from the software so that you can turn it on or off. It'd be even great if there was a gesture on the AirPods themselves where you could control that. But like I said, no time frame on the AirPods. That's probably more going to happen sometime in 2020. And then another audio-related thing we're hearing about, of course, is the HomePod. The rumors have been around for a while that Apple is planning or has in the works a new cheaper or more affordable version, possibly available for release sometime early next year. And one of the areas it seems like where they would save some money is in the tweeters. If you have a current HomePod, you probably know that there are 7 tweeters in that thing. This new version is expected to have just 2 tweeters, so that's where maybe Apple could cut some costs. I think if Apple can release a version of the HomePod in the $100 to $150 price range, I think they would sell a lot of those devices. So I would expect that to happen. I would hope it would happen sooner than later. It'd be great if it had happened this year, but right now that's not what we're hearing. It's probably going to happen sometime in the late winter, early spring time frame. And then finally, we are expecting that 16-inch version of the MacBook Pro, Apple basically replacing the 15-inch version of the MacBook Pro with a new 16-inch screen that will fit in the same form factor, basically reducing the bezels and giving you more screen. And I am particularly excited about that. There is no firm time frame for that, but we could see that as early as October, as I mentioned previously. So all in all, some great updates coming, but right now we just have the rumors and speculations to talk about. But we won't have to wait too much longer because fall is here and the fall cavalcade of Apple products is just around the corner. So stay tuned for that. Remember the great Siri recording scandal of 2019? Yes, it seems like it was just weeks ago. Yep, that one where Apple had a contractor listening to 0.2% of Siri recordings that were anonymized and without personalized data, but the internet freaked out about. Yep, that scandal. You remember that one? The one where Apple never hid anything and openly talked in interviews about the fact that they were running that kind of program so that they could make Siri better? Yeah, that one. You remember that one? Well, if you do, then you probably also know that because of the press coverage and all of the bad publicity, Apple basically immediately suspended the program that was, you know, there to help improve Siri, something that people always complained about. I heard all the complaints about how Siri needed to get better. Apple was working on a program to make that happen. They had all these people who are working for them, working on the problem, and you know, it got shut down basically because of this whole thing. And can you tell I'm a little bit frustrated? Well, now I'm even more frustrated because this week we get news from the Irish Examiner that there are reports of 300 workers who were tasked with actually listening to those recordings, about 1,000 recordings per shift. Yep, those folks are all out of a job. Apple shut down the program, and they don't need those folks anymore. Their job was basically to transcribe the recordings and grade Siri's responses according to various criteria, such as whether or not Siri was invoked accidentally. These workers were hired on fixed-term contracts as data analysts for a company called GlobeTech, and now because they aren't needed anymore, they're out of a job. What's even more frustrating is that Apple does plan to potentially bring the program back at some point, and while they haven't given an official timeline, I would imagine it would be relatively soon. At least that's the way it seems in a lot of the reports, and so that just makes it even more kind of suck for these folks who have lost their job. It's never a good thing when you have to lay off or let go of 300 people. And it's a little bit frustrating as an Apple fan because I don't think there was any egregious wrongdoing here. But for Apple's part, they're feeling like maybe they did breach our trust a little bit. They posted a FAQ this week to kind of answer some questions about the recent coverage and changes that they're making to the Siri grading program. Basically, what they're telling us is that when and if they do resume the program, that it will only happen with Apple employees. So I presume that means they're no longer going to be using third-party contractors, and that those employees will only have access to the bare minimum amount of data and information they need to do the job of grading the recordings. On the accidental Siri triggers, they're also going to do a better job of not trying to not listen to those recordings. They say they plan to delete those recordings if they can determine that the recordings were a result of an accidental trigger. The program is also going to be opt-in, which is really great news. There had been early reports that Apple was going to add an opt-out feature, but we are hearing that it is going, or Apple is saying it's going to be opt-in for the grading. That's going to, of course, require changes to the software, but when that happens, that will be the way it works. It's really how it should have been from the very beginning, and I talked about that on a previous episode of the MacCast. But they also do emphasize that computer-generated transcripts are going to be the norm, and those aren't going to be something that you can opt out of. It's what they use to help train the AI system. So basically, they take, you know, voice to text and then take that text and feed it back into Siri's learning system so that Siri can get better. And there is going to be no way to opt out of that other than not using Siri or voice dictation at all. But again, they're making it very clear in their terms of service. Those transcripts are also retained for just 6 months and then deleted. And I think it's, again, important to point out, and they do point out in this FAQ again, that all of this grading content is actually anonymized with a random ID, something that is not traceable back to the device or the user or even their iCloud account. And there was a lot of confusion about that when the story originally broke, because there were some allegations that there was data that would link these voice recordings back to an iCloud account, and that's just simply not true. It's something that's never been proven, and Apple has always said that they're using a random system for this grading service and for just helping make Siri better. So a little bit of disappointment with the folks losing their jobs. It's good to hear Apple being even more transparent about what's going on with the program. And if you want to see that information, it is up and available on Apple's website. And hopefully they get that program back up and running, because I, you know, I don't know about you, but Siri has just gotten better and better for me over the years. And if this is how they need to go about doing it, then I'm in full support of it. And I, you know, I don't think in any way, shape, or form Apple was trying to invade anyone's privacy with those recordings. I don't think they were dangerous. I think it would have been very hard for a hacker, even if they had gotten a hold of all those, or all of those recordings, to trace any of those individual recordings back to individual people, with maybe the exception of recordings where someone was giving personal information directly in the voice recording. And I don't think this FAQ did anything to address those scenarios. I don't think, you know, once, other than the opt-in, right? So if you opt-in, you could have a situation where you might be reading off a phone number, or maybe giving out an address, or giving up some personal bit of information, and obviously that's going to be part of the recording. But at least you're going to have the choice when maybe setting up your phone whether or not you want to participate in that program. And I presume, you know, Apple's, well, I think by its very nature, by asking, it becomes a lot more transparent, right? People are aware, hey, we are going to use these recordings to help make the system better. Are you okay with that? And like I said, that's how they should have done it from the beginning, and ultimately I think that's a really good thing. Apple released an update to iOS this week, iOS 12.4.1, and I usually don't cover simple point releases of iOS, but this one's pretty important, so I want to make sure that you're aware of it and that you install it, because it's an update to fix a security vulnerability. You may not want to use it if you like jailbreaking. Basically, what happened was Apple accidentally unpatched a vulnerability that was originally fixed in iOS 12.3 and reintroduced it, and they had to go, oops, we better patch that up. The jailbreak community found it really fast, as you might imagine, because it allowed jailbreaking. So if you apply 12.4.1, your phone's going to be much more secure, but you will not be able to jailbreak it with the recently discovered jailbreak vulnerability, right? So it patches that, but I think security is probably more important than jailbreaking for most of us. Apple also did update tvOS to 12.4.1 and watchOS to 5.3.1, and released a new build of macOS Mojave with some security patches and fixes in it as well. 10.14.6 is out. And there was also an update to the beta version of Apple Music for Android. Yes, I'm covering an Android thing because I think this is pretty cool. Apple added Chromecast support to Apple Music for Android. And that means if you're an Android user, you can now stream to Chromecast-enabled devices from Apple Music, things like your Google Home. And while I am a fan of the HomePod and Siri and all things Apple, I know there are a lot of folks in the Apple community that have Macs, but maybe run Android phones or other Android devices. And I think it's nice to see Apple supporting other options. It's not something we typically get from Apple, so I think it's worthwhile to praise them when they do that, and especially with Apple Music, you know, and they have a vested interest. Like, let's be honest, they're not just doing this out of the kindness of their heart. They know that there are a lot of folks that are on Android devices, and they want to woo them as Apple Music subscribers. Services is Apple's new big growth business, and if they're going to grow that business, they have to appeal to the widest range of users out there. And I think we're going to see more initiatives like this. I think we're going to see Apple opening up more. We already have with, you know, the Apple app making it to smart TVs. Like, this is a new Apple that's focused around services, and it's interesting to see. I think it's really interesting to see them doing things that historically they haven't done in the past. So changes with Tim Cook and the new regime, and I'm, as you can tell, excited about it, even though I'm not an Android user. And then finally in the news for this week, a rumor of a feature that was coming to iPhone, and it looks like, unfortunately, it's not going to happen, at least not in the immediate future. This is coming from the site The Information. They reported that Apple was supposedly working on a walkie-talkie feature for the iPhone with Intel. It would have used the 900 megahertz radio spectrum and long distance radio waves to send messages directly from one iPhone user to another, all without using Wi-Fi or the cell network. This would have been pretty cool, right? Supposedly, Apple had to ice the project because the guy running it, Ruben Caballero, left Apple, and also the technology that was going to enable it was integrated into the Intel modems. And as you know now, Apple settled its lawsuit with Qualcomm. It stopped its relationship with Intel, or was shutting down its relationship with Intel, because they weren't able to deliver the 5G modems that Apple wanted. And with that, Intel shut down their modem program, which has now been acquired by Apple. But for now, this walkie-talkie feature is shelved. So we do have the rumors that Apple has been working frantically on developing its own cellular modems. So I wouldn't say it's dead and gone forever. I would imagine a rebirth of it when Apple starts building their own modem chipsets. But what do you think? Would you use a walkie-talkie feature on your iPhone? This is, and I do want to point this out, different than the walkie-talkie feature that is available on the Apple Watch currently. That feature actually uses cellular data or Wi-Fi to do its stuff. This would have been pure radio wave stuff, so more like a true walkie-talkie on your iPhone. Does anybody actually use the walkie-talkie feature on the Apple Watch? I played around with it once or twice, and that was about it. I never have used it since. I know it's still there, but I don't know anybody in my immediate circle that uses it on a daily basis. I think it would be a little bit different with your cell phones. I remember a cell phone company in the 2000s, maybe mid-2000s, and I'm blanking on the name of it, that had this walkie-talkie feature, and a lot of people really used it and liked it a lot. So will we see a resurgence of this sort of thing at some point in the future? It seems a little weird, right? We've got all this great high bandwidth cellular technology, and we're going to roll back to old radio wave technology, but still cool nonetheless. But with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank another show sponsor, and that is Masterclass. Look, I am absolutely in love with Masterclass. I think it is amazing. It is a place where you can go and get training and information from some of the most talented people and instructors in their respective fields. If you want to learn about television and cinematography, if you want to learn about writing, if you want to learn about sports, if you want to learn about science and space and, you know, all kinds of amazing topics from amazing, talented people, Masterclass is the place to go. And their courses are incredibly well produced and presented, some of the best I've ever seen, and they are really easy to pick up and consume, even if you just have a little bit of time, because they take the courses and they put them into small chunks. I really like the fact that I can take 10 or 15 minutes, watch one lesson within a course, and I can fit it into my schedule. And it's made even easier by the fact that I can access those lessons whenever and wherever I need to, whether it's on my iPhone, my iPad, my Mac, or best of all, my Apple TV. And I've been watching various courses for a while. I've told you about a couple of them. But recently, I've been really enjoying a feature of Masterclass called Playlists. And Playlists are a way for you to explore their entire catalog with different instructors. So you'll go in there and you'll find an instructor or a course you want to watch. And that's just one instructor, but they have so many instructors and different topics that playlists are a great way to kind of get a sample of different things. And one such playlist that I've enjoyed recently is something called the Idea Store, a playlist called the Idea Store, which is one all about getting and having great ideas, where they come from, how to cultivate them, and how to build up the ideas. And keep in mind, what's cool about this is advice from amazing people, people like Steve Martin, David Mamet, Malcolm Gladwell, all teaching you or telling you how they get ideas and inspiration. And that's just one playlist. They've got dozens of these. They also have tons of courses, over 60 courses, and they're constantly adding more. And while you can get courses individually, that is an option, I would really encourage you to check out the All Access Pass. Having access to all of it is amazing because you literally could develop the creative skills to, say, make an entire film. If you're an aspiring filmmaker, you can get screenwriting from Aaron Sorkin. You can get filmmaking from Martin Scorsese. You can get directing from Ron Howard, scoring by Hans Zimmer. Like, literally make the entire movie, all with information and learning from Masterclass. And you can have unlimited access to every Masterclass as a MacCast listener and get $30 off. All you have to do is go to masterclass.com/MacCast and you'll get $30 off your Masterclass All Access Pass. Be sure to act now because this offer is for a limited time. Masterclass.com/MacCast, and a big thank you to Masterclass for their support of the show. Last episode, we were talking, or actually trying to help a listener with a question he had about time zones and entering events into Apple's calendar application, both on Mac and iOS, and basically keeping that event at a specific time, regardless of when and where you were. So he wanted it basically to not be adjusted by the time zone he was in. By default, the calendar app will actually adjust an event that you enter into the calendar for the current time zone that you're in. So if you enter it in the Pacific time zone and then travel to the Eastern time zone, it's going to shift it by 3 hours. And he was trying to avoid that. So I gave a couple tips and tricks, and we talked a little bit and tried to explain why that worked and why that happened. There's some settings in iOS and on the Mac that I think can be a little bit confusing. And I kind of threw it out to you in the community and said, you know, do you have any other tips or tricks related to this? And almost immediately, many of you sent me emails to say, hey, Adam, there's actually this feature called a floating time zone that you can use. So on the Mac, when you enter an event, when you see the option, when you're putting in the date and time for the time zone, you can pick the floating option. And what floating means is not what it sounds like, because to me, floating sounds like it's going to move around. Floating actually means it's going to remain static, or at least locked to the time that you entered it in at. So you set the event and it stays at that time regardless of which time zone your Mac is in. It will not adjust. It will not float around, even though it's called floating. I'm still a little bit puzzled or baffled by that. Maybe somebody can, maybe I'm just thinking about it wrong. And if you can explain it to me, that would be great. Send me an email or shoot me an audio comment. And this is great. This is exactly what this listener was looking for. I think it is a great tip. Except, yeah, you knew there was going to be a but, right? There is one, I wrote in the notes, a small issue. I think it's actually a big issue. It's a huge issue for Apple. Apple's calendar app on iOS, guess what? As near as I can tell, and I've tried and I've looked and I've Googled and done all those things, it has no option for a floating time zone. So you have no way to enter a floating time zone event on iOS. And if you're like me, when you're entering calendar events, it's mostly on your mobile devices. I very rarely do it on my Mac. One listener said a way to work around this, or a way that he works around it, is he puts in a, you know, far out future date, because you can always adjust the date on his Mac, a bunch of blank floating events. And so you could just set up a bunch of blank ones and then grab those and then reassign them. Because once it syncs through iCloud, it does maintain that floating time zone, but you literally can't select that as an option when you're entering an event in Apple's calendar app. Luckily, though, if you have a third-party app, something like Fantastical or BusyCal, those do support entering a floating time zone on iOS. So that's the other workaround, and that's actually what I do. I am a huge fan of Fantastical. I actually use it on my Mac and on my iPhone as my main calendaring app. And yes, it all syncs through iCloud and syncs into Apple's calendar app and all that stuff. So it works really great for me, and it does support this feature. So I just want to say thank you to all of you that emailed in with this tip. So look for that floating option if you need to enter an event that doesn't move around. And this is kind of a nice option too, because you can leave the time zone support on and use time zones for your event. And then every once in a while, when you need something that's more static, you need it to stick to a certain time, regardless of the time zone that you're in, you can use the floating option. So great tip. And again, the MacCast community coming through for us. I also got an email this week from Todd, and Todd is having a little bit of trouble with an iMac, just a single iMac in his home that seems to be losing internet connectivity about 2 minutes after he turns it on and it connects to his Wi-Fi network. He wrote to tell me that he was using an Eero system, which is a great mesh networking system for his home network, so he didn't think it was a problem with his Eero's, because all of his other Macs and all of his other devices are connecting to that just fine. It checks out. He's tried resetting and all that other stuff. It really is only this one iMac that was kind of giving him Wi-Fi trouble. So immediately when I start hearing something like that, I start to think, well, maybe there's a problem specifically with the operating system itself, and you might need to do an operating system reinstall, or it could be maybe failing hardware. The only other thing that I often will ask people, because this was a news story, I don't know how much of an issue it is anymore, but a while back, there was a situation where if you had an external USB 3 hard drive, and I think this is only spinning hard drives that do this, and you have that kind of close to your Mac or near where the antennas might be, it can create some interference that can potentially knock out wireless networks. So one recommendation is if you have external USB 3 hard drives, that you get a slightly longer cable and just move it further away from your Mac. Now, I did email Todd and asked him if that was his situation. He said, nope, that wasn't it. So then I immediately thought, well, you could have a failing Wi-Fi antenna or airport card in your Mac. And you can either, you know, take that to Apple and see if they could diagnose it and potentially replace it. But you could also potentially do it yourself if you have an older Mac. Places like iFixit or Otherworld Computing do have replacement airport cards that you can get for your Mac, and you can install those yourself. If you're a little more faint of heart and you don't want to crack open your iMac and you still want a DIY solution, you can also get USB Wi-Fi adapters relatively cheaply. I actually use one from a company called BearFi, called the Bear Extender. It's an 802.11ac external USB network card, basically. And I use that with my old 2006 Mac Mini so that it has the latest Wi-Fi technology, stuff that it didn't originally come with. I want to say that machine probably has 802.11g. It could even be B, but I don't use it anymore because I have that Bear Extender. So if you have an older Mac with a conked out Wi-Fi, that could be an option. And so we were going back and forth with Todd on email, and he finally wrote back to say he actually discovered the culprit, and it wasn't any of those things. What it turned out to be was that in his network settings, the SOX proxy had been turned on. And what was more disturbing was he didn't know how that got enabled, at least at first. So he wasn't really sure. I sent him a follow-up question and said, hey, have you ever used any VPN software or SSH tunneling software? Because some of that stuff will turn on SOX. And in case you're saying, hey, Adam, what do you mean by SOX? Like the stuff that go on your feet? No, we're, again, talking about computer technology. So what SOX is SOX is an internet protocol that exchanges network packets between a client and server through a proxy server. So it's basically a way of proxying your network traffic through another machine. And that's why it sometimes comes into play if you're running some VPN software. So typically you might use SOX to route your traffic through a proxy server to have your traffic coming from a different location than your physical location. So it can hide your location. You can also just use it for troubleshooting, that sort of thing. And it's like a VPN. You might be saying, hey, that sounds exactly like a VPN. What's the difference? Well, the difference is that SOX is generally not encrypted or is not encrypted, and VPN is generally encrypted. And the advantage of using SOX versus VPN, if you don't need the encryption, is speed, because encryption actually slows things down a little bit. And anybody who's ever used a VPN, you've probably experienced this. So, like I said, some VPN apps offer a SOX as an option, and I emailed Todd back, told him about this, and he did confirm that he had used NordVPN, which does have a SOX feature. So maybe somehow that got turned on at some point. Todd didn't realize it, and then that was causing this network problem with this particular iMac. So he just uninstalled the Nord software because he wasn't using it anymore, and also went into his system preferences, into his network settings. And then for whatever connection you're having trouble with, the Wi-Fi or the Ethernet, you select that, click on Advanced, and then you're going to want to go to the Proxies tab. And then in the Proxies tab, you can see if you have a SOX proxy turned on. And if it's there, you can just simply turn that off. It's a little checkbox. And that fixes things up. And that's what fixed things up for Todd. Now, there's one other thing I want to mention here, because another thing that could potentially turn on a SOX connection, because again, SOX can be used to kind of hide where the traffic is coming from. So it might be wanting to proxy your connection through some other point so that it's not going through your typical ISP. It's actually going to a bad guy machine, right, to report stuff back, sort of a phone home kind of system. And so you might, if you have noticed SOX is turned on and you haven't been using a VPN software, or you don't know how it got turned on, it might be worth grabbing a malware detection tool, something like Malwarebytes, and just running that on your system and make sure that you don't have any kind of malware or spyware installed on your system. Luckily, that wasn't the case in Todd's situation, but I thought I'd point that out as well, as long as we're on the subject. And this must have been a week when the solar flares were particularly strong, because it was a week when I received a number of emails from listeners who were having problems, but just random problems with only one device. And I always attribute this jokingly to things like solar flares. I say they're like knocking out just specific items, you know, or devices, right? You're walking in the wrong location and your device gets hit by a solar flare and then everything goes wonky. Because in addition to Todd, he had an issue with his iMac. I also received an email from Ben, who was having an issue with his iPad Pro. His iPad Pro 11-inch was suddenly having really low volume output with wired headphones or Bluetooth headphones, basically any headphones. It was perfectly fine with the audio coming out the speakers in the device. He had no problems with that. With the headphones, he was using a USB-C to 3.5 millimeter adapter, but it didn't matter. Headphones, wired headphones, Bluetooth headphones, he was getting a really low volume, and he couldn't get the volume any higher, making it very hard to listen to things on his iPad. And he went into the Genius Bar. They poked at it, prodded it, with no luck. They couldn't figure out what was going on. Ben had tried restarting different headphones, different adapters, didn't seem to matter. And he was pretty much at his wit's end. He said you could barely hear with the volume at the max, and it affected all of the applications. So it wasn't application specific. It didn't matter if it was music, YouTube, apps, system sounds, didn't matter. And so he was completely stumped. He emailed me, and I got to thinking on it, and I could only come up with one thing for him to check. And a lot of people probably don't know this because it doesn't make sense that this is how this feature works. But there is a feature in the music settings. So if you go into settings on your device, go into the music settings, and then swipe down to the playback settings, you can look and you'll see in that section there is a volume limit that you can set. If that is turned on, then that will set the max volume that you can set your volume on your device to with the volume slider or with the buttons on your phone. So if you tap on that, you'll see a little slider, and you want to make sure that that is adjusted all the way up so that you can go to max volume. If it's down or slid down any lower and you're adjusting the volume, that is the max volume for your device. And unfortunately, when I emailed Ben back and gave him that bit of information, it didn't work for him. So that wasn't what was going on. As a matter of fact, he had already checked it. I just missed it in the email when I was reading it. So sorry about that, Ben. But in the end, he did go back to the Genius Bar, I think at a different Apple store, and they were able to fix the issue by resetting all the settings on the device. So going into Settings, General, Reset, and then tapping the Reset All Settings button. Now, unfortunately, if you have to do this, it is going, you're going to lose the settings for everything. Things like your Wi-Fi network will have to be reset up. I think a number of other of your settings will have to be reset. But it's kind of one step away from basically erasing, backing up, erasing, and restoring your device, so you don't have to go that far. But the good news was it fixed the issue for Ben. So if you've run into this issue, if you have some kind of strangeness going on with the audio on your device, this might be one thing worth giving a try before you have to do that last ditch step of completely erasing and restoring your device. So glad you sorted it out, Ben, and thank you for following up so that we could share this information with the community. All right, last thing that I have for you is a little bit of follow-up. We talked about Apple Card on the last episode of the MacCast, and we talked about the fact that the Apple Card now has care instructions. So if you want to keep it clean, you need to keep it away from denim, you need to keep it away from leather, and you can use isopropyl alcohol to actually clean it. And I was kind of joking that leave it to Apple to create the first credit card that needs cleaning and care instructions, like a support article, which I thought was pretty funny. But listener David followed up, and he had some information, because I had asked also, what about cases, or what about some sort of protective cover so that I can keep it in my pocket or my wallet or in my, up against some leather and not have it get discolored. And I figured, somebody's got to be making some cool microfiber sleeves or something like that. I've been keeping my eye out. I haven't seen anything like that yet. But David did have a little tip for us related to this. So here's what David had to say.
Hi, Adam. It's David in Connecticut. I really appreciated your comments about the importance of keeping your Apple Card clean. I'd never thought of that issue. And I just received mine last week. It was seamless to set up. I have had a great experience with it. I've used it a couple times already. So based on your comments, what I ended up doing was getting one of those RFID sleeves to keep my credit card in, and my Apple Card specifically. So these are available on Amazon for less than $10. You can get a whole bunch of them for all of your cards. I've had one sometime for my passport, and I've used it for my passport, but I've never worried much about my credit cards. Now, for listeners who don't know, RFID stands for radio frequency identification. And what it does is block radio frequencies from having access to your cards. Intruders can actually, who know what they're doing actually, can actually go in and apparently extract credit card numbers, I don't know what, whatever. But in any event, they're a good thing to have, just another layer of safety. So I highly recommend getting them, especially because they're so inexpensive. And again, Adam, thank you so much. I continue to enjoy the MacCast, having listened ever since you started back whenever, 2005, whenever it was.
Actually, it was December 13th, 2004, I believe was the exact date, in case you want to know your MacCast history. But, you know, really, who cares? It was pretty bad back then, so don't go listen to that stuff. It is available out there on the internet, but I would just stick with the latest MacCasts, and you'll be fine. But, David, thank you for giving that tip. I had seen actually some of those RFID sleeves on Amazon. My only hesitation in buying them is that a lot of them look like they're just that kind of Tyvek paper kind of stuff. And I kind of like a really nice one, something like I mentioned, something microfiber or something like that. But certainly that's an affordable option, and you might just pick some of those up because it's cheap and easy. You can replace them as they kind of get grungy and cruddy and stuff like that. With the Apple Card, I don't think you're going to have to worry about the RFID part of it, because the Apple Card, as near as I can tell, and I did some testing with an RFID like scanning application, it doesn't have an RFID chip in it. Now, the little envelope that the Apple Card came in, that does have an NFC RFID chip in it, because that's the thing you use to activate. And when I scanned that, I did verify all that does is it has a little URL in it that tells the iOS software to open up the wallet app. So it's not anything interesting or nefarious or anything like that. That's all that does. But if you kind of scan the card itself, it does not have that chip in it. Now, there are credit cards out there that do have NFC or RFID chips in them. So I think that's typically what those sleeves are used for, or like your passport, as you mentioned. So at least the Apple Card, we probably don't have to worry about that piece too much. But still, it is a great option. But as I thought also, we're already starting to see the third-party market for Apple Card sleeves pop up. I think some have shown up on Etsy. I think I saw an article, somebody is making a skin, so like, basically a protective film that you can put over, or a sticker that you can put over your Apple Card, and it has a little cutout hole for the chip, so that will still work. So you can kind of change the style. It also only covers the back down to, of course, the mag stripe. So you can't protect the whole card with a skin, but we are seeing people already put those together. So leave it again to Apple to create a third-party market for cases and accessories for a credit card. It's a really strange time we live in. It's kind of crazy when you think about it. But again, thanks for sending in your comments, David, and I appreciate your long-term support and listenership. But with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank my show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, along with PDF Pen for iOS and PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information and details on all of their great software by visiting smilesoftware.com/MacCast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, please send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline. That phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. You can leave a voicemail there. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you can find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And finally, if you want to follow me on social media, it's pretty much MacCast everywhere, but I am on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or you can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. But that will do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.